Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm sitting here with Sarah McDewling, and we're sitting across from Sarah Wilson, who's coming to talk about a new book, Simplicious Flow. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks, guys. Good to be back here again.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you again. If you keep,
producing all books.
Yeah, just keep on rolling through.
Yeah, you know what time of year it is, don't
you? Yeah, Sarah, some time. this book is, Simplicious was enormous success. It's one of the most successful books you've done, isn't it?
I think, to be honest, I actually think my first book, I Quit Sugar, the original, is the one, it's just gone and gone and gone. Yeah, it keeps just selling.
Simplicious for us is the biggest one.
It is?
This time you've gone, there's a little bit more. You've got a different angle. Can you tell us what the angle is?
Well, it's the anti-cookbook. just to sort of stick a bomb under the situation. As it says in the main cover line, this is not a normal cookbook. And when Ingrid, my lovely publisher, who I've had a relationship now with for, 7-8 years, she said, look, Simplicious did well. Could you do another? And I said, well, only if I can do things differently, because the whole ecosystem of cookbooks is incredibly unsustainable and there is so much wastage in the way that recipes operate, but also the way the books are produced. So she gave me license to stick a bomb under the situation and off I went. And it took me almost 2 years to put this book together because it's a whopper. It's the biggest I've done. It's 348 recipes. And what's different about it is that instead of working with a recipe with a list of ingredients that you've got to go out and buy and, you use a teaspoon of whatever it might be and it sits in the cupboard and feeds the weevils for the next 2 years until you do a clean out, I wanted to do it so that you actually use up all the ingredients as you go. So the book's full of these capsule cooks and they're kind of like mini meal plans. Mm-hmm. You get given an ingredients list, you go to your supermarket or whatever it is and you buy a minimal amount of ingredients. So it'll be between 8 and 15 ingredients, and that then allows you to cook a capsule of meals. So it'll be like 4 weekday lunches or 3 family meals for 4 people, and all the ingredients get used and you kind of do most of the cooking in the first meal, and then sort of leftover roast veggies that you cooked all in en masse get used for the next couple of nights. So it's really geared at families, single people, just busy people basically, who are sick of seeing sad lettuces sitting at the back of their fridge at the end of every week. Mm. The other thing I did is a really big survey of 3,000 people in my community to see what they were wasting and to see what their food waste angst was and whether it was actually an issue for them and made them as sad as it made me, and got some incredible results. Like 72% of people chuck out bagged spinach every week, and I'm like, right, we've got to fix that. So I sort of target all the issues in the book, and it's everything's in there. So anyone who's listening to this who did the survey and you had some questions for me about what to do with celery, because you don't like sticking it into anything but a soup, I answered that in the book. So, yeah, everything gets used up. Even somebody challenged me actually halfway through the book and said, all right, Sarah, we know what you're like. You don't waste a thing but banana peels. What do you do? I said, admittedly, it's kind of a bit of a sore point, but leave it with me. So in the book, there is in fact a cake that is a banana peel loaf. It's like a banana bread, and it includes no sugar, no bananas, but 3 or 4 banana peels. And I tell you, it tastes like banana bread. So much so, I went on ABC's Back in Time for Dinner that Annabelle Crabb had on the ABC a few months back. And I was in the episode called The Future. So it goes through all the eras of
food. Of course you're in the future.
Yeah, I'm in the future. I quite like the ring of that. Yeah. I am the future. To talk about sugar and food waste. And so I made this cake using the banana peels from the mother's cake that she was making using bananas and 3 cups of sugar. So we both made these cakes and presented it for afternoon tea to her kids, expecting them to vomit out mine, but even the little one who's got a sweet tooth, if you remember from watching the show, said that she liked mine. And the teenager who I think was trying to impress me said she liked mine the best. So, so there you go. So that and apple cores. There's a recipe for apple cider vinegar, which I know I go through in my house, you know, sort of quite regularly, that's made out of apple cores, you know. That's so you just cool. put them in your freezer until you've got enough to make the batch and off you go. So it's sort of simplicious on steroids, you know.
So in your own life, you, as I said before, you're living what you do, what you say in your books, you're living that. I mean, I see again the green shorts are in there. So there's these things that, that you use and reuse and use, and you ride bikes around, you do. So what kind of things, like for people who are going to try and change this, what are the hardest things, what were the hardest things for you to sort of get your head around and in changing your life to actually crossover.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Look, I mean, for me, I've lived this way because, not because I'm trying to be pious or, and in many ways, I do it for an awareness of just waste and what's happening to the environment and all of that kind of thing. That's a big part of it. But to be honest, I probably wouldn't stick to it except for the fact that there's a selfish element, and that is it actually makes my life so much easier. you know, I can afford butter. You know, I'm not on the breadline. I've sold a few books through Booktopia over the years. Yeah, I can afford butter, but I haven't bought it in 3 years because what I've worked out, I go to cafes and my friends will order stuff and, you know, I'll order things and it comes with a little side of butter, either on a tray or, you know, in expensive foil packaging and everything. And it usually gets tossed. I go and collect it all and put it on a used paper serviette. I don't get a brand new one. I hand those back. But I get them on that, fold it up, take them home, put them in the fridge. And this is a little known fact, is that once you put it in the fridge and it's gone cold, you can just lift it off. It, like, just comes off. And that's what I use for butter, is all my friends, my own butter dregs from cafes. I've actually taken strangers' butter as well. And I do that as a way of kind of starting a conversation around this.
Yeah, I can imagine a conversation starting around it.
Yes.
Is Sarah all right?
Well, I was once sitting in a cafe having a meeting with somebody and there was a couple, and I think they were tourists, and they'd brought out the wrong pancakes, you know, and the waitress said, would you like me to put this in a container for you, you know, the wrong ones, you know, and you can take them and have them later. And they went, oh, no, don't worry. And I leant across two tables. There was another person in between and said, excuse me, you know what you could do? You could take the fruit off and, like, diddle it, and then you chop up the pancake, and if you just fry that off in some oil or butter or coconut oil, and then it could become this crumble with it. And I did this whole thing, and then the person I was with was just looking at me, and I said, oh, gosh, I'm really sorry. I just couldn't help. And they said, oh, that's okay. We know who you are. So my reputation for that kind of thing precedes me, unfortunately. But,
did they take the pancakes?
They did. And then I gave them instructions on what to do with the plastic container that the pancakes, you know, came in. So for me, I guess, oh, look, I mean, some of it's just trying to make this sexy for other people. I just do it. And I long ago got over the idea of coming across as weird, and because I almost feel it's a mission. You know, I need to be the person in the cafe that breaks that ice, you know, and hopefully other people will feel more comfortable. And I've seen on Instagram people share photos of how they've taken bones home from the restaurant. Now, I've done that where I've taken a neighbour's, somebody I've never met before, I've taken their bones home and I've asked them to meet me back at the same place 3 days later, and I've given them the bone stock and said, here you go, and you can go to my website and get the recipe.
Wow.
So, yeah, I kind of, you know what, I mean, it's kind of makes life a little bit fun.
Yes.
It's kind of a nice sport.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess, I mean, I ride a bike. I don't own a car, and I ride a bike because it's actually, you know, as the title suggests, it creates a lot of flow in my life, you know. Mm. I just know, oh, well, if I ride, I can drop that off at the post office and I don't have to park and get a parking ticket. And I just kind of, you know, ease my way, and sometimes I put my bike on the train and, you know, to go home and then ride down the hill. And it's just this lovely flow. And once you get the hang of it, and you start thinking, oh, I don't have to buy that, and I don't have to, I can reuse that. And you just realize how easy it is.
I saw on your Instagram a while back, you having a meeting in town and leaving the bike on the main, like in the city, on the on the street with no lock, no nothing, and you just came out like 3 hours later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You took your bike and went off.
No one took it.
No. Well, it's a very unique bike. I think you'd probably, you know, I think it'd be easy to find somebody who stole it. Look, I don't recommend this to anyone listening. Do lock your bike. I just have this thing for not doing things that you're meant to do, I suppose. And it just sat there. It behaves mm-hmm. itself. But sometimes I've taken it into Apple stores. There's a bookshop I work from, and quite often, if I forget my lock, do you mind if I bring it? I just take it upstairs to the cafe above the bookshop and just put it in the aisle. And I shouldn't push things, but most people are kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, well, you know, she's kind of doing her own thing, and I don't know, it's sort of, it's flow.
Yeah.
People embrace it if you're trying to make an effort, you know?
Yeah. So everything in the book, every single part is part of this ethic, this
yep, belief absolutely. System. So the ingredient, we don't have a recipe index, it's an ingredients index. So it's about you've got zucchinis or you've got eggplant and you just go to that bit and you can find out how to use it. I've actually even limited the number of ingredients that are used in the book. So it's not like random stuff that you'll only, like, I've actually designed it so that every single weird ingredient has at least 3 or 4 recipes that use it, so you can use it up over mm-hmm. the course of the book. There are also 52 challenges, so it's got the double flaps as per my last book, and you open it up and there's 52 challenges. So there are people out there that really want to have a structure to the way that they do things and to making a shift. So I've got all these different little things that you can try one per week over the course of a year, and you can it's got a little section where you can tick it off. And then I've also tapped into, as I spoke to a number of the big supermarkets to find out what's super cheap at certain times of the year when it's in abundance. So things like mangoes, like a tray of mangoes is just so cheap, you know, sort of coming up to Christmas. Asparagus is super cheap when you get it at the right time of the year. So I've got these chapters which have sort of 8 recipes that, you know, there's a chapter called how to use up a tray of mangoes, how to use up a tray of peaches. I've done the same for a whole bunch of ingredients that become uber cheap, like a fifth of the price, in some cases a tenth of the price at certain times of year. So you can just go in, buy it en masse while it's cheap and make things that will last about up to 6 months in your freezer or ferments or pickles and things like that. So you just go in and blitz your tray of mangoes. And I've actually got a mango and turmeric ferment that we made on the shoot, gosh, it'd be 9 months ago. And actually almost, yeah, it was at Christmas time last year.
Oh, wow.
And I've still got it, and I had it for lunch on the way here to come and talk to you guys. And it's still going, fermenting away. And it's still in perfect condition. Well, this is the thing. I don't, because I'm one person in my household, although I have enough food for about 15 people. But no, it's sort of in and out, and I've got sort of, you know, the ferments do sit in my fridge for quite a long time, but,
yeah.
You know, that's okay because they're sort of special things. But my freezer just, you know, it's kind of rotating. But like I say in all of my books, a full freezer is the most economical way to run your freezer from an energy point of view, because air freezes at a higher temperature. What I should say is air, yeah, you want more solids in your freezer than air, because solids freeze at a higher temperature, if that makes sense. So your freezer doesn't have to work as hard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So just a little, I mean, yeah, the book is full of those little nerd facts.
I don't know why I just had in my head an image of Hannibal Lecter with bits of bodies in a freezer, but I don't know. That's a full freezer.
That's a reflection of the kind of books you generally read.
Right, okay.
And probably right as well. So, yeah.
All these full freezers around my house.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's a chest freezer usually.
Yes.
My freezer won't fit a whole limb.
what's in there at the moment if we were to open it?
Yeah, well, funnily enough, I actually went on a mission to use everything up because there was still stuff from the shoot, you know, and as I say, in fact, I haven't said this. It's actually the world's first zero waste cookbook in the sense that the making of the book was zero waste. So, which is quite a feat because it took us 5 months to shoot the book because there's so many recipes in there. So, we had an extra fridge and freezer in the studio. And so everything that we made went in there. And then if we had to put a crumble on something later in the book, I'd pull out a muffin that I'd made in, you know, week 2 and crumble that, and I'd share the fact that I'd done that in the book and go, you can just use this, or you can use this, or you can use this, you
know?
That's
so cool.
Yeah, and you just kind of heat it up and crumble it into some oil or butter, and that becomes your crumble. So, yes, it's the first zero waste cookbook, you know, in the world. And what's in my freezer? Well, it was a lot of the food that was left over from the shoot. But I generally, if I'm at the supermarket, I always go, there's a section in my supermarket where meat that's about to go off is 50% off. So I know that people will buy it when it's 30% off or 20%, but when it's 50%, people get freaked out. I go in and just sweep through and buy it because I'm not worried about it, and I put it straight into my freezer and it's, you know, perfectly fine. It hasn't reached its use-by date and it's perfectly fresh and usable. So it's got sort of – and I don't like buying plastic trays of meat. This is something that I learned in the writing of the book. The carbon emissions from food wastage are way higher than any problematic environmental issues from the plastic packaging. So if it's all tossed out, then that's the worst travesty. I'm better off going and buying it up before it gets tossed out, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I've got a fair bit of meat in there, you know, that's almost off. I've got things like, and I've got this in the book, is when lemons are on special or they're cheap and in season, I basically put them all through my blender rather than having to juice lemons throughout the year. And I put them all through my blender, put them in an ice cube tray, freeze them, and then I have containers full of 1 tablespoon amounts of lemon juice. And it's got pulp through it, but most of the time, you just need some lemon flavour in a casserole or a soup, right?
Yeah.
Nobody cares if it's got pulp and a little bit of rind through it. And in fact, the rind has health benefits. It's actually got an anti-carcinogenic effect, which is something that I also learned in the writing of Simplicious, actually. So I've got that. I generally buy silver beet. It's coming to season, so I'll steam it all up at once rather than doing a bit here, a bit there, and having dreggy bits. So I steam it all at once to about 60, 70%, and then it condenses it down, obviously, and then I freeze it in whatever plastic kind of guff I've inherited from around the planet, you know. And I've got them stacked up in my freezer, and so I just throw them into a stir fry or a casserole or whatever, or even just reheat it in my steamer, you know.
Yeah.
So I've always got either kale or silver beet or whatever in my freezer. And on and on I go. It's a full freezer and it's got stuff like that, but it condenses it all down. I don't just whack in full loaves of bread and crusts and daggy bits. And in fact, I've got a chapter on how to use up all the bread dregs from the back of your freezer, because that was something that a lot of people said, a bit like what you're saying, Sarah, is, you know, how do you fit everything in your freezer? I guarantee most people's freezers, and I don't know if you're listening out there, if you agree with this, are full of
junk.
Bread dregs, like the crusts, right, wrapped in, you know, the bag and, you know, the tag's fallen off long ago and it's icicled, you know, to oblivion. So I have this thing where you do a sort of an Armageddon, you pull all of that out and you just spend a couple of hours blitzing it into, there's a hummingbird cake where instead of using flour and you use old bread and it just becomes the flour. So, yeah, there's a few things like that where I do tackle those kinds of quandaries.
You've had an enormous ride with your book, First Mate Beast Beautiful, coming out, which was a very personal book for you. Coming out there and laying it out there that how you were feeling behind the scenes and behind the glossy front covers and the like.
Clothes at 15 years old.
Yeah, very glossy. It's very Vogue. and then you were on TV in the US and made it big globally. How has that book changed the way you live? Has that lifted your, has that changed things in a positive way?
Yeah, absolutely. It's completely changed my life. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. So for anyone who's not familiar, the book is about my anxiety and bipolar. And it was just people say, it must be great just to kind of have it all out there. And that was part of it. But the writing of the book and also the discussions I've had with people, you know, in the media, in the supermarket randomly, or, you know, the Today Show in the US, which was a lovely interview. It's such a lovely level of conversing, which I've been craving, and I think a lot of people have been craving, talking about real stuff, you know, stuff that matters to us. And we just, there's just not that opportunity normally. People don't go down those layers, you know. So it's really, firstly, it's made my life a lot more interesting because conversations that I'm having have just been so enriching. Also, it's connected me with humans in a way which I have just loved, you know. There are a lot of sad people out there, and there's a lot of people out there that actually want to make a difference. And it's just been so nice to connect at that level. But I think from my own personal point of view, John, it's enabled me to actually access, it's given me license to, for instance, with Simplicious Flow, to kind of do a book that sticks it up, the system, and to feel like I have permission, if that makes sense, to do it, because it's like, oh, well, she's a little bit bonkers. You know, we all know that now. So she's, you know, she's allowed to, or, you know, that makes sense. But it's just given me, it's made me feel a lot freer. Yeah.
And also you dismantled or shut down iQuitSugar.com in the same period.
That's right.
Is that taken a weight off? Was that overhanging you in some way?
It was a commitment I made to actually live. So it was, you know, I write about some of this in First We Make the Beast Beautiful. It's a bunch of commitments I made to myself about to live with just the clothes on my back according to the values that I believe in. And so I created this business and I committed that at the 5-year mark, you know, I wanted to be at a certain point and I was not going to be one of those sad sacks that, you know, got the Toyota Corolla and went, oh, I think I need a BMW and kept going until I was 70 and then I die, you know. And so I drew a line and just went, nope, that's it. I've done as much as I can or as much as that's important. I've done my job in this sphere. And I decided not to sell because what it's enabled me to do is to keep the I Quit Sugar brand. So I've put out Simplicious Flow. It's another I Quit Sugar book because it's sugar-free. I still have... I sold off a bunch of the recipes to Sam Wood and all of that money went into my philanthropic trust that I've built, and I now still produce various I Quit Sugar assets and all of that money goes into my philanthropic trust. So now my efforts are in building ideas in and around charitable organisations that I love working with, and it's funded. You know?
Yep.
Such a wonderful thing to
do. Yeah, it's a weird way to go about things, but it's working for me at the moment. And to your point, writing the book got me, First We Make the Beast Beautiful, got me really real about what it is I want to do with the rest of my time on this planet, you know? I'm sort of theoretically halfway through my life at 44, and, you know, it ain't no run-up anymore. This is not a dress rehearsal.
Well, you can see that. I mean, I remember getting an email out-of-office reply from you sometime during the year that said, Sarah's gone to the desert or something. back later on. You've been doing more of that, just going off. You can see from your Instagram.
I'm exploring a few things, yeah.
Like I saw you in, was it Greece and Yugoslavia? Or
Slovakia and Slovenia,
But just going off completely, it looks like off-grid in a way. Is that part of this? I really want to be in
this
world.
I've done that for the last 8 years, actually. Actually, when I say the last 8 years, for the last 12 months, I've lived in one place for the first time in 9 years. So for the previous 8 years, I was living out of two suitcases. So I was traveling like that a lot, which is just part of who I guess I am. But, these journeys will now probably feed into my next book, which I've started writing.
You allowed to tell us about that?
I would if I could. I have no bloody idea yet. I'm in a swirl of exploration, trying to pinpoint the thing that I want to kind of, the thing that I want to find myself talking about in 2 years' time when I do the book circuit and come out to Booktopia and do another podcast.
We've got you down saying that now.
We're
booked in.
Yeah.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming and talking about Simplicious Flow. It's been wonderful to chat with you.
Thank you.
You know, informative for us as well.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being supportive of the book. I hope people enjoy it. And by the way, for anyone listening, it still has a lot of sexy recipes and images, and it's still, you know,
it's absolutely gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's, yeah. It doesn't look like I've pulled everything out of the garbage bin.
Don't Barbie, not yet.
No, not at all. We can do better than that. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And you can get hold of all of Sarah's books on booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.